We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the After Further Review podcast. I'm Pete Doherty, along with Eric Baranchek, and we're here to talk about something that we've never talked about before on this podcast, and that's a tie game. The Packers 40-40 tie with the Dallas Cowboys. Eric, let's get right to it. I guess the big thing is, you know, the Packers' defense had looked so good. It was a number one scoring defense coming into the fewest points allowed coming into this game. They gave up 37 in regulation and then another three in overtime. What happened on that side of the ball?
That's a great question. It's I don't know if it's just one thing. I think it's a couple things. The Packers front four was so dominant in the first three games. You knew at some point that the teams were going to find a way to exploit that. And you say, how can you exploit it? Well, they figured out a way, primarily to be able to block three of the four really good. And I think the loss of Devontae Wyatt was an issue that not everybody saw coming. It forced some of the other guys to play more. It forced Wooden to play more, especially in passing downs. And you saw them trying to make adjustments by laying Micah Parsons up over the guard, center guard. They brought 90 down. They did a lot of things. And I think Lucas Van Ness, you know, when they put him, I thought he would be more of a factor there in the passing game when he would play a tackle, and they just weren't able to generate anything out of that. What I call the point on pass rushes, there was nothing collapsing the front end of the top of the pocket, and I think that was the first time all season, and they kind of got shell shocked, and you know. One of the things that really sticks out is how come they didn't blitz Packers when they needed to, especially in the fourth quarter and in overtime when they needed to heat that quarterback up. Because you saw him, he's known for that, and he did it. You know, he had that throw turned out to be a great catch, but that was a terrible pass there at the end of overtime before they scored the touchdown.
That was really dangerous. Yeah, that was really dangerous.
And he's going to do that kind of stuff. And the Packers never really made him feel super uncomfortable back there. And that, you know, if you look at the Commanders game, I mean, that poor quarterback, he was running for his life. And I think, you know, as a coaching staff, you get into that mode where you think you're so good that you don't have to do much different. And unfortunately, they ran into a buzzsaw and needed to do something different, and it didn't happen.
Do you think as the game was going on, you know, so he's got the chance, you know, you can always adjust, right? The game plan going in, right. Probably don't need to blitz, so you can always adjust. Do you think his thinking was, you know, those guys are eventually going to get there and make the play? Or what? Why do you think he would? Because, you know, I did the count, and Hedger and Cooper blitzed twice. And Quay Walker only three times, and one time it was both of them on the same play.
Right.
So that's only four plays where they're sending the linebacker in on one of, I think it was one of Cooper's blitzes. They dropped Van Ness, so it was still only a four-man rush. I think they still call it a pressure, but, you know, it was still only a four-man rush. So what do you think he thought they would, oh, they're going to get home one of these times? Or what do you think the thinking is there?
Absolutely. That's absolutely the thought process. So, you know, as a coach and you're holding onto your play sheet and you're making calls, it's like, you know, for 3 weeks, this is work, this is work, this is work. And you have so much, and let's face it, you got Micah Parsons, right? So you think eventually it's going to get home and, oh, this is going to be the time, this is going to be the time, and it just never happens. And I think what they're going to find out, or what they did find out, is they're going to have to be able to be more flexible. And last year they blitzed quite a bit as the season progressed. And you got a capable blitzer with Cooper. You get into a situation where I'm always dropping seven and you feel good about your coverage. And the coverage was a little bit shaky, but I think the biggest issue was they didn't heat up. I mean, they should have, if they sack Prescott 2, 3, 4 times, the game probably looks a lot different. You know, the game is probably a W there, because they were just unable to get him to throw up any stupid passes. And I think that's the bottom line, is they did not adjust. And my guess is that won't happen again. But and they got put in a tough spot in a couple of places. So they, you know, the offense didn't do them any favors there when they had the fumble. That was a position that they should not have been in, I don't think. I think they're just going to have to understand that, you know what, we are going to have to adjust on occasion.
You know, it's funny, because watching the game just live, I was thinking, you know, Parsons really is just, he's not showing up in this game. But when he got some pressures, you know, but when I rewatched the game, he got a lot of pressures, or he won right off the bat on a lot of passing downs. He just, for multiple reasons, he just never got to the quarterback. He actually rushed really well. He rushed better than I thought, watching the game live. You know, I watched it on tape. I don't know if you saw that too.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that, it goes down to the point that there was nothing else coming from the other guys. There was no pressure at the top of the pocket push. Because if you get that top of the pocket walking back, now the quarterback can't step into his throws as comfortably, and it allows the ends to get home. And that's kind of how you design your pass rush constantly, is that. And the other thing that we saw a lot of in previous weeks was there was a lot of twisting, and there wasn't much of that. So whether it was they just looked at the personnel that they were playing against and thought, we don't have to do anything special, these guys just sound good enough, we can just be completely vanilla up front, and they're going to get home, or those linemen played the game of their life. It's probably a little bit of both.
So I wondered, watching live, you know, it's not like they just got killed by the run game. It's not like Dallas ran for 180 yards or anything like that. But the one thing when they made, the one thing when they made the Parsons trade was, you know, I mean, it's a trade you got to make. You'd make it 10 out of 10 times, but they did lose Kenny Clark in the deal. And Parsons isn't a great run player. He's not a good run player. Kenny Clark was a really good run player. I wonder if, you know, the long-term take I took was, you know, I think special teams can improve, as much of a disaster as they are. I don't think this is going to happen to their defense again, but, or, you know, the pass rush, I think, like you said, I think they'll blitz more if they need to, but I don't know. I wonder if they're going to have, against good running teams, if that's going to be where they're vulnerable, if that's going to be their Achilles heel, because that'll allow teams to be more balanced. It'll help their pass game, and they'll have to do more to stop the run, which might hurt their pass rush a little bit. That was the red flag that bounced out, that jumped out to me. I don't know if you had any opinion on that, or if you know what your thoughts are there.
Great point that you made there. But the previous 3 weeks, I mean, they gave up, I think, 80 yards on the ground to the Browns. In the first 2 weeks was like 46 and 50 in those.
Yeah.
I think the run game on defense, honestly, they, with the speed they have at linebacker and the way that they were, their run fits were coming up, and they were so good the first 3 weeks. Hence, I don't want to go out there and say they're going to be, it's going to be a liability, because I don't believe that. I think the biggest – I don't think that's what beat them. I think the biggest problem that they really had was a lack of pass rush. And the run game, you know, they if they don't go into overtime, they hold them under 100 yards. So I don't think the run game is as shaky as it may appear or may – you may. I feel the run fits aren't terrible, and I think with the speed they have at linebacker, I don't foresee that being their Achilles heel. But it does show you that their secondary doesn't always hold up very good, and they're going to definitely need either to mix in more man coverage, or they're going to need to they got to heat up the quarterback in order to be successful at this point.
Yeah, and I wonder if they'll, because their speed is, they're a great asset, but they got to keep blockers off those two guys too, you know, Cooper and Walker.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
I mean, so losing Wyatt, they're thin up front. I mean, losing Wyatt is, we saw in this game, that's borderline catastrophe, you know, when they don't have him.
Right, I mean, because he brought pressure, and he didn't, you know, he's not, you know, Aaron Donald where he's going to get double-digit sacks, but it's not always about getting sacks. It's about doing your job and fulfilling the needs of what your job is on defense. And the job of the defensive tackles primarily is to just collapse the pocket from the top down so that the ends can get home. I mean, how many times was Micah Parsons running around? But the other guys, you know, where was Gary? How come Lucas Van Ness wasn't getting home? Ngambari on a couple of cases. I mean, they were throwing everything in the kitchen sink personnel-wise. I mean, Baron Sorrell got reps. You know, it was a lack of throwing guys at it. I think the premise of not the fear of having to send a backer or a safety or someone to get to the quarterback. What marveled at was last year they seemed to be really good at using other means of getting to the passer rather than just you're down four, and it just went out the window. And I think it's just it's as a coach, when you're having success doing something, you think, you know what, it's next play, it's gonna come, and then all of a sudden the game's over and nothing happened. So it's a learning experience for sure. And there's gonna be games like this, but the lack of being able to adjust and make the pressures when you needed to get them was glaring.
So there was there were some catastrophes in this game on special teams and in game management. I don't know which you want to talk about first.
Let's talk about the special teams. You know,
let me interrupt you for a second here, because everybody thought Musgrave was the guy at fault for the blocked field goal, because he blocked the outside guy instead of a guy on the one step on the inside, and the thinking was you got to take the more immediate threat. But we talked about this yesterday when in our phone conversation for our column, and I watched all the extra points. You're right, that was the problem. The issue was much less him, and it was Brant Banks who the problem was.
100%. And I saw it on the first when they did their first extra point. You saw Brant Banks just get dominated. I mean, he goes flying back. I mean, listen, you're in a no-win situation when you're on the end there. You got two guys. I mean, you have two guys to block three, and that's not an easy task. But he just got physically dominated and got pushed back. I mean, I was like, holy cow. And then we actually were watching it with a group of people, and I grabbed the remote, and I'm like, watch this guy get destroyed. And, you know, it was pretty glaring. And obviously the Cowboys saw that, and they said, all right, the next time we're going to make an adjustment here, and that's where we're going to put the pressure. And that's what happened. I mean, it just physically got dominated, and you saw them. I mean, the Packers realized it too. So they pulled him and replaced him with Elgton Jenkins there to shore that up. And you saw Elgton Jenkins being able to, you know, at least be successful. So, you know, boy, you know, it's just like when it rains, it pours on the stinky teams, and they got to have that shored up, because that is not a winning success.
So, because Bisaccia pulled Musgrave too. and he put in Carl Brooks in that spot. But so here's what I saw. I rewatched it a bunch of times, and we haven't had a chance to talk since then. So the one thing you could fault Musgrave for was with that outside rusher, that's his guy. He lunged at the guy. He kept his inside foot, you know, his foot closest to – he lines up right behind the end, the tackle at the end of the line there. Yep. So he's right behind him, almost facing the sideline. And when the outside rusher came by, he lunged at him. He kept his foot down, but he lunged at him. So there was a little extra space. When I watched Brooks doing it, Brooks didn't just keep his foot down. He kept his whole legs, his leg and his backside. He kept them as far back as he could and just got as, you know, and it was like, I'm staying here and I'll just get as much hands on him as I can. And it turned out to be, you know, that was plenty. So I think we could probably fault Musgrave for that. But if Banks handled it better, I don't think it would have mattered because he didn't even get his arm up to slow the guy down. When I watched Jenkins doing it, he blocked both guys and he got knocked on his backside, but they didn't get anywhere near blocking the kick. So he basically blocked two guys himself. He let them run him over, but that slowed them down enough where they had zero chance of blocking the kick. That's what I saw. I don't know if that's what.
Yeah, and that's what. But that's the whole deal. I mean, when you watch Banks, I mean, look at those two reps. They're terrible. I mean, I'm surprised he doesn't have a pink slip in his locker right now. I'm sure those thoughts are going through people's heads, you know, on the flight back to Green Bay that they were like, this. How do we keep this guy? We got to get rid of him.
Yeah, well, he was a call up from the practice squad because of the injuries they had on the offensive line. So that is the domino effect that happens when you have injuries. But still,
but it's the coach's job to make sure they get the right guys in the right place to be successful, and they missed there.
Or the guy's got to know you got to block both guys. You know,
well, from seventh grade on, you know that.
Yeah.
You know that your job there is not fancy. It is ugly, and it's going to – and especially, you know, the further away from the end of the line you get, it's going to get uglier. And you know what? You're probably going to get knocked on your butt. And you talk to players about that. But the worst-case scenario is just let a guy come running through there and not even get a hand on him. Because it's amazing just by getting – just by extending your arm and how much that just a slight – teeny tiny little redirection of a rusher, how that affects them and how it doesn't allow them to do what they did. So it's, man, it just when it rains it pours on with the stinky teams there, and they're gonna have to find a way. You know, Bisaccia is gonna have to kind of get his hands around this. But the problem that you see, this isn't just a one time thing. It's coming up all over the place. You know, there's punting, there's kick returns. I mean, it's just continual.
Yeah, that 45-yard kick return to was that just I can't remember now if that was the start overtime or if that was I thought it was at the end of regulation. That was a killer too. So there's, you know, obviously when things go wrong, there are tons of Packers fans who are calling for Bisaccia to lose his job, that they need to make a change there. What do you think?
That's not a mid-season move, I don't believe.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I mean, could it happen? Yeah. Can he turn it around? For sure. There are some bright spots. I mean, they got a kicker that's, you know, other than getting blocked, he's pretty darn good. And the blocks aren't, you know, you can't blame him. They got a punter that can punt it out of the building.
The return game is really shaky right now with those two rookies doing it. They're going through some severe growing pains there.
Yeah. I wonder if Matthew Golden remembers the second half.
He took, man, that's as big a hit as you're going to see a guy take. That was, I don't know why he spun there. He caught that punt and he spun. I don't know why he did, because it left him really vulnerable, and he just got tattooed.
Well, there's not a whole lot that I can say about the return game with that young man, but I can tell you this, I would be very shocked if he ever spins again. Because I mean, can you imagine? You know, you spin and then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, your teeth are getting jarred loose. And the fact that he held onto the ball, what a tremendous.
That was really surprising.
Because that's as hard of a hit that we've seen a Packers return guy get in a long time.
And with Savion Williams, you know, I rewatched all those kickoffs. So he let three of them. They were kicking it low. So that's not an easy catch. But those balls were hitting at the four-yard line, almost like it was clockwork, the four-yard line. And he caught one of them and returned it. And he let three of them bounce. And if it bounces between the goal line and the 20, it goes in the end zone. It's a touchback, but it's not to the 35. It's to the 20. They got to work on him catching. I mean, everybody's going to do that. You know, that's
ideal. Yeah.
If you're kicking off, that's ideal to have him starting at the 20. He's got to catch those balls and return them.
Yeah, and they're going to find ways. I mean, there's so much video to watch. And these coaches, they spend so much time breaking down every little thing, the footwork, where they can gain an edge, whether it be matchup-wise or, like in this case, we're going to put it on the four-yard line and let this guy flounder. That absolutely, every team is now going to do that until they stop it. So, yes, that has got to be a point of emphasis coming up, that he's got to go up, catch that ball, and make sure that they're not putting themselves in a bad spot.
All right, let's get to the game management. So at the end of the first half, they get the ball back with, I think it was 41 seconds left, and LaFleur, they're leading 13-9, I believe, and LaFleur decides to go for points. You know, I didn't have any issue with them at first going for it, but when they got that false start penalty, so then it's 1st and 15, I was thinking then, man, I don't know that I would try this now. I would just I might just run out the clock.
And he
went for it, and Love got hit before he could get the ball out. Fumble. A couple plays later, Dallas is in the end zone, and Packers dominate the first half, and they're losing 16-13.
That is 100% game management. What a miscue. They should have, you know, in retrospect, I'm sure, you know, LaFleur is thinking, boy, if I just run the ball three times and punt, you know, we got a bleed going in, and the outcome of the football game is probably different. But yeah, that was, I mean, it was inexplicable as to why you would do that. Because you're putting your team at risk there. You know, it's like deja vu. You know, you're watching the Browns game, and you saw the pick there, and you think that while it's not at the last 4 minutes of the game, it's you know, under a minute to go in the half. Let's just get out of here, where we go back into the locker room, and we can make adjustments if we need to, or whatever we're going to try and do here in the second half. But for that to happen, what a blow to your football team, because now the Cowboys are coming in out of the halftime feeling really good, emotionally high, rather than having them come out of the locker room grabbing for straws. You know, that was a huge miscue on their side there. And certainly, I don't know if they – what the thought process is there. Obviously, they're thinking they're going to try to get a couple shots and get a field goal before the end of the half. I mean, I can – if that's your thought process, and then you get the false start penalty, now you got to readjust. And that, to me, was probably the play of the game that sealed it for the Packers right then and right there.
I wonder if the play to make is you run a draw. And if you bust it for 12 or 15 yards, then you keep going. And if you don't, then you just capitulate and accept.
Well, here's the other part too, is your offensive line has been shaky. Okay. They're shaky. And even the one guy that's left out there on the field that you expect to not to be shaky is Jenkins. And he has been shaky. So, why are we putting these guys out in a position where something bad could happen? Let's keep things going, and let's just run the ball. Maybe we get lucky, but let's run the ball, run the clock out. At the worst case scenario, punt it away, and Dallas has got the ball with 20 seconds on their 30-yard line. Good luck, right? yep. So I don't know I'm still scratching my head trying to figure out what the process of that they were trying to accomplish there, but that just went horribly wrong.
So who here's something we did not discuss. We haven't discussed yet. So this is hitting you out of the blue. Jordan Love had a 118.1 rating, Prescott 124.9. Who do you think had the better game? Who do you think is the better quarterback? Who would you rather have?
I would rather have Jordan Love. Just for the simple fact that, you know, you saw it at the end there before the Micah Parsons sack that, you know, Prescott's just going to wing it every once in a while. And every quarterback does that too. Let's be real. But I really like the way right now what Jordan Love is doing. Does he get happy feet on occasion? Yes. And in this particular game, this was the one game that Jordan Love needed to put the offense on his shoulders and go out there and win it. And he was effective and he was efficient, but he did not get out there and do the little things that he probably could have done to win it. But I think if I had to take 10 games out of 10, I'd probably choose Jordan Love 9 out of those 10 times, but I still like Jordan Love a little better.
Yeah, me too. He did not handle the very end of overtime great. I think that's probably got to be more on him. We don't know what's going on in the headset, so we don't know what LaFleur is saying to him. But, you know, they let a lot of time run off at the very end there where they were in position to score a touchdown, to possibly win that game. They were in position there, and they were lucky that there was still a second left when he threw that ball in the end zone. But I was thinking, you know, I'm not so sure Aaron Rodgers early in his third season as quarterback would have handled that, you know, any better. I think the Packers started his first season, or his third season. I think they might have opened up 2-2. So I don't know. What did you come away from that last minute of overtime thinking they totally botched that? Or
I think the last throw, you know, I don't know if I would have gone to the rookie. You know, in that instance, I think, again, it's a rookie thing. I think there was an opportunity for him to do a little theatrics there to try to go back to the ball a little bit differently and try to pick up a pass, a PI, but the ball was deflected, you know, early. So, I mean, I don't think that was probably a play that they would have called. But I think Wicks, if you look at the left side of the end zone, I think he was breaking open there, and I think that would be a more a throw that I would rather make him than the other go to the rookie. Rookie, he hasn't proven that he's going to go up in traffic. The good thing is he stayed in bounds the entire game, so that was a plus. But that young man's got a ways to go. That in that situation to win the ball game, I'm not so sure the ball goes there.
Yeah, and it was more. I was thinking more just the time issue. I mean.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was they had a second left. I mean, that's cutting it way too thin there.
So answer me this question: you got a second left, and you play for the tie.
Yeah, from where they were.
Right? Why not? Why not line up and throw it in there one more time? I mean, you're gonna lose the game or you win the game, and I don't understand that.
You know, because it could come down to the loss column for playoff seeding.
And yeah, I get all that. But is that really going through your head at that time?
Oh, it's got to be, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's different.
It's got to be going through his
head. I guarantee you this. This is what I will promise you today. Dan Campbell would have thrown that ball in the end zone.
I don't think so. I don't think he would have.
Oh, no way. The guy goes for it on 4th and 5 routinely.
He does.
He's throwing that ball in the end zone, and that's what should have happened. He should have threw the ball in the end zone, kick the field goal, you win, or you're going to get a freaking tie and walk off. Where are you going to feel worse as a football team? Losing or tying?
I disagree with you completely.
Fine. Throw the ball in the end zone.
I want to check. They were at the 16. The chances of scoring on that play, that's probably a 5% chance.
That's a much higher chance than that.
The chance of hitting a field goal is, 98%. So, okay, so it's a 10% chance of scoring from the
game.
I'm definitely.
Don't tell me the analytics. Win the effing game, Pete.
But you're gonna. Chances are way better. You're gonna lose the game. And that half game, that could be the difference between a home playoff game and not.
I know. It throws everything up. Now it's all turmoil.
Yeah, I don't think any coach is going for the end zone.
Let me ask you this. Can this coaching staff beat Philadelphia Eagles?
What's that?
Can this coaching staff beat the Philadelphia Eagles?
Sure.
When?
Can they?
I mean, if Barkley's hurt and Hurts is hurt, maybe.
Well, if Hurts is hurt, definitely.
I
think the Packers, you're saying they have zero chance if they play them in a playoff game.
Pretty much. Yep. I don't think the coaching staff as it sits right now can go out and win the big game. And I think that you see these things happen and they all pile up, and we've been seeing them for 7 years. They're going to have to, if they dominate throughout the entire game, that'd be good. But there's just not enough adjustments being made to do the little things, I think. And I think part of it is the amount of time that the quarterback has been the starter. And but I think there are times that they just don't adjust. I saw some things happen that were really good, like on offense. Okay, so your run game is struggling a little bit. The best guy on offense arguably is who?
Yeah, it's Jacobs.
Jacobs, right? So we're not running the football as efficiently a little more effectively. And you saw the Cowboys not press it. The first 3 weeks, the teams they faced, their defense pressed the run game. And the Cowboys said, you know what, if we're going to – lose this game, we're going to lose because of Jordan Love. And it didn't happen. But they got the ball into Jacobs' hands in the passing game. So that was a bright spot. And I think he's got to catch the ball out of the backfield 5 to 6 times a game until they can shore up that offensive line and get those guys blocking. And it isn't just the offensive line. It's the tight ends. They got to win their blocks. And it's not – so until that happens, throw them the football 6 to 8 times a game. Let your best player on offense have the ball in his hands in space to make plays. So that's it. But so that was the bright spot. The negative spot is they still do the stupid things. That third down fumble at the end of the first half was horrible. Run 3 times, punt. Play 1 snap on defense. They're going to throw it in the end zone. Hopefully it's a Hail Mary and they ain't going to get there. And you walk off and you go into the end. You go into halftime with a lead. Instead, they make a stupid decision to throw the football down deep in your own territory and with a shaky offensive line and the worst possible scenario. The only other possible scenario that would be worse is a pick 6. So why put yourself in that position?
Well, we'll get an answer to the question because they're going to play the Eagles at home in 6 or 8 weeks, something like that. And, both of these teams have good seasons. They could easily see each other in the playoffs. So we'll find out whether they can do it or not. That's for sure.
Yeah, that is. It's going to be a really, really good game to see how they match up. And I think going forward, how the defense is going to morph. Are they going to continue to rely on their front four, or are they going to, mix it up and say, because Edgerrin Cooper is a really good blitzer, and we haven't seen him in the backfield much in passing down. So I think that is something that they are going to have to reignite on that defense in order for them to pull that. They got to pull that out once in a while just to be successful. And heat the quarterback up, because when you have a quarterback that has 124 QBR, chances are what? You're going to lose. You know, you want to, you need that. You have a QBR of, and you only throw, you went 31 for 40. That's a recipe for a loss. And the only way that you can get, there's two ways to cover the pass. We've talked about this 1,000 times. If we talked about it once, either heat the quarterback up or play really good coverage. And they didn't either.
You know, one thing that I really learned from those first three games was when you're getting a lot of pressure and you're really getting after it, even if you don't get home, the quarterback's got to get the ball out so fast that he's either just dumping it off and you're tackling for short gains. Your defensive backs know that they don't have to worry about double moves, so they can squat on routes. You know, that's what jumped out more than anything from in those first three games was it was less this all the sacks they got, which was, I think they had 10 in the first three, but it was more the completions were all three yard completions or less. You know, the ball had to come out fast.
Yeah, the ball had to come out fast, and the quarterback had to throw it away because he was and they throw bad passes.
So it's still worth the blitzing anyway, because you guys know that they don't have to cover forever. And you know, with Parsons, when you blitz, you got a better chance of getting home because he's either taking up two or three blockers or he's going to win.
But to counteract that as a D coordinator, anytime you can have seven in the backfield covering the pass, you feel really good about it. You're really comfortable in that scenario. And then, so you blitz a guy, now you only got six. You blitz two guys, you know, now you're down to five and your odds of completions go up unless you get home. So to play it safe, yes, you sit back there and your front four, the first couple games, three games have been extremely effective, but it's not effective. And they didn't make, you know, the curveball came and they swung hard and, you know, they didn't make the adjustment, and that's going to be the name of the game, is that the coaching staff is going to have to be able to make comfortable adjustments on the fly. You can't wait till Monday. You got 60 minutes and that's it. And you have to be able to make those adjustments. So to sum it all up is, I think that talent is there. I think they're a talented football team. I think they have some talent there. They have some, they're dripping wet and young talent. But the coaching staff has got to take over, and they gotta be able to make the adjustments and put guys in positions to be successful. Period. End of sentence. Bottom line.
Well, they've got we're about a quarter of the way through the season, so they need to, in the next few weeks, they need to figure out who they are, and what they're going to be, because it could take half a season maybe, but the expectations are high, and they should be, because as you said, this was a talented team anyway, and then you add Parsons to it. The expectations should be really high. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground here, Eric, so we'll wrap it up here. Want to thank everybody for joining us, and I'm glad you think we're worth the download. We will not be on next week because there's no game this weekend, so enjoy your bye weekend. But we'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about the Packers game against the Cincinnati Bengals. Until then, everybody, take care. You've been listening to the After Further Review podcast. For Eric, I'm Pete. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Be good, everyone.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.